Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyssen. This show, the recap of Tour de France Stage 4, is brought to you by our show partner, Lacole, who produce performance cycling apparel. We cover every World Tour race. We obviously, therefore, cover every Tour de France stage. Doesn't matter. This is still a triple emergency, triple warning podcast. You'll find out in a second, but wow. The memes are flowing already on Twitter. But before we jump into today's pod, I just want to let you know a couple of things you can do to help out the podcast. We've got a lot of views on these YouTube videos if you're watching there, which is great, but not too many of you are subscribed. Like 80% aren't subscribed. So if you can subscribe to that channel or like the video, it makes a big difference to us, your prospective sponsors, etc. They look at those sort of things rather than the views, unfortunately. And there's our Ko-fi link where you can donate directly to the podcast, which supports things like audio or sound engineering, etc. But the biggest supporter of this podcast is our show partner, Lacole. They produce performance cycling apparel that's made in Italy. They have the Project Aero McLaren collaboration. You can check that out if you're wanting to get some fast kit for racing. But if you're just riding around in summer, mountain climbs, etc., they've just launched their lightweight collection, which will help you stay cool in summer on long rides. It's made of breathable fabrics and lightweight materials. If you want to get 20% off, you can use our code LRTDF20. That's LRTDF20, all caps, which will get you 20% off all Lacole items. So thanks to Lacole for supporting the podcast. This was supposed to be a regulation sprint stage, and thank God it turned out to be from Redon to Forger. I've been struggling with the pronunciation of that village for couple of weeks now. 150Ks, no categorized climbs, one intermediate sprint with 36 kilometers to go. And it was a peaceful day, no crashes, just really good from that aspect. There was mooted overnight, supposed to be a rider protest, 50K neutralization, 10Ks, and then it got whittled down eventually to like a minute or two, and then they stopped, I think, out of the neutral zone. We'll talk more about that afterwards and the safety ramifications coming out of yesterday's stage. But there was a break, Benji. It looked a bit like a suicide break, Michael Scher and Kung style stage 10 last year, but maybe give people a bit of background about who Brent Van Moor is.
Yeah, Brent Van Moor and Pierre-Luc Perrichon in the breakaway. Pierre-Luc Perrichon, known as a rider that goes in the breakaway a lot from the history, but Brent Van Moor, one of the stage winners at the Dauphiné, in a fashion where he has such a strong solo ride. And he tends to use the rolling terrain very well for himself to try and keep the gap to a storming peloton very highly. And he tried the same in the Ronde van Limburg and got sent the wrong way with a few kilometers to go, and therefore lost that race, unfortunately, which was devastating. And today that breakaway looked like they weren't going to make it, because like two riders up the front, that's like, yeah, it's usually something easy to control in the peloton. And they went towards the intermediate sprint. No KRM points available today, so Edi Schelling was chilling in the back. And Brent Van Moor takes that in the breakaway. And in the peloton, we see that it's honestly a masterpiece from one team. We get an entire setup where I think Evdege is being put at the front with Demar really trying to get points there. We see Colbrelli moving to the front. And we see Mercu and Cavendish not really at the front. We see them in like 7th, 8th position. Until we get to the section before the intermediate sprint that goes slightly downhill, and then it goes slightly uphill towards an intermediate sprint. And Mercu sees that, and he uses that downhill speed that the others are looking around a bit to try and pass everybody on the right side of the road, with Cavendish on the wheel, perfectly following the wheel, takes over everybody and goes into the final stretch, basically delivering Cavendish on a platter for the intermediate sprint.
He had to break. Mercu had to basically break, but then he's like, because he's the master, and this is why some people put him in their Velo Games teams, because they're, you know, he can take intermediate sprint points and he tries to then take the next place after Cavendish. I think Buani pipped him because he started decelerating so much, but that was perfection. They kind of stuffed it up a little bit yesterday at the intermediate sprint, but they got it right today. And it was, that was ominous signs for the later sprint, because I guess with Ewan out, he abandoned yesterday, Demar looking completely off, and Alpecin, are they going to go for Merlier or Philipsen? They won with Merlier yesterday. Quickstep were looking like the favourites, I think, for that sprint, quite rightly. But, yeah, the race pretty much petered along. It was nice, Benji, to be able to relax it seemingly in quietude.
Yeah, oddly quiet, because in the peloton it felt too quiet because we kept that gap with the breakaway, and they kept it towards the 45 seconds for a long margin there. At a certain point, we had Van Moor dropping Pierre-Luc Perichon in the final 10 kilometers. Well, I think 14 kilometers to go somewhere is where he dropped your boy Perichon. And the gap was still 45 seconds. And you know that when you see a peloton where the second rider in the peloton is Lotto Soudal and there's five riders next to each other at the front, then the tempo is not being set by a sprint team like a DSM that takes over with 15K to go and usually disappears in the last 2 kilometers. That wasn't happening today. You didn't have that team that was taking over. You even had Ineos sitting at the front trying to keep their leader safe there, for example. So the tempo was not set by sprint teams trying to catch those breakaway riders as much as possible. Well, the breakaway rider that was left, Van Moor, and he ended up using those rolling hills very, very well to increase his gap to the peloton to a minute at roughly 10 kilometers to go. And I was like, are they really underestimating this man after the two races he did in the last month? Because it hella looked like it, yeah?
And after breakaway master himself, Thomas de Gendt, crowned him on Twitter as the next Thomas de Gendt. So not a man to be trifled with. And then there was that, I'm not sure if you mentioned, Benji, that was that Belgian race they sent him the wrong way. He was going to win that too. So he's, crazy strong, Brent Van Moor. And the thing about Quickstep at this Tour de France is they don't have the full lead out train. They got Mercu, obviously, and De Klerk, who doesn't really do the lead out, but they don't have the Seneschal, the Lampard, who can really control things from like 3Ks out and build a high speed like we saw in Paris-Nice Stage 5, for example. I talk about that perfect lead out all the time, where it's Ballerini, Cataneo trying to do that job, and then Asgreen, and it's pretty much then Mercu on his own. So Alaphilippe had to get involved in the lead out just like he did in Tour de la Provence. But just going back a bit, the teams we saw presenting, as Benji said, weren't the ones you'd expect. And I was like, are they getting a bit complacent here? 10Ks to go, a minute. 8Ks to go, 58 seconds. 7Ks to go, like 55 seconds. 5Ks to go, 52 seconds. And it was, I think, Quebec Assos, and I want to give a big shout out to Lotto Soudal, firstly, to Harry Sweeney, and I think it was Tosh van der Sande, might have been De Boist. Sorry if I got you guys wrong. They were blocking, doing an excellent job blocking and messing up that chase.
Like the legal
blocking,
by the way. Yes. Like, we got to keep it real here. Like the legal blocking where they try and sit in second wheel so that the first rider, when he flicks his elbow to take over, he's staring into the eyes of a Lotto rider that says, no way, damn it. And the gap was indeed 50 seconds with 5K to go. And that's where we saw an interesting thing with Groupama taking over quite highly. And we saw Delier as well for the team of Alpecin also at the front. And the tempo started increasing, but then suddenly Alaphilippe started taking over. And I think one rider ahead of him, but I'm not sure who it was. I think Davinens, but I could be completely wrong here. And they started hammering it up this false flat uphill section where Van Moor was starting to hurt and you could see it. And certainly the gap went from 50 seconds to 30 seconds. I got a heart attack at that moment. And like 2 seconds later, it was back at 45 seconds.
Italian and time gaps.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on anymore. And I was like, he has it. He doesn't have it. And it kept on going. It kept on going. And oh my God, it became very close in the end, didn't it?
While I was thinking Alpes and Phoenix, I was like, guys, don't you want to take control here? Like you've got, I thought they should be going for Merlier. Apparently, they said they were going for Philipsen. They got Van der Poel, Rickard. They got three strong guys to do the lead out. And they had Murisa, I think, doing some controlling duties before then. And they didn't really ever take control. It was mainly Alaphilippe, as Benji said, punching up that climb. And then it cut back to – so we didn't see, unfortunately, the full shot of what was happening in the peloton because of – the existence of Brent Van Moor up the road. We saw a lot of teams actually, there's a corner the one with, I think, like 400Ks to go, maybe a bit longer. 400 meters. I'm too excited. I saw a Total Energy rider on the front. I was like, that is not good news for anybody.
Yes, indeed.
But anyway, it was Merlier. I don't know really what Mathieu van der Poel was doing, to be honest. Van der Poel, I don't think he's a good lead-out man, frankly. And I've said that before. My honest opinion is he's a bad lead-out man. And he kind of half did, half didn't do the lead-out today. And it's almost a stage he would have been a great shout to win. But we see Brent van Moor, 400 meters to go. We can see the peloton, this long shot, this false flat drag coming really quickly. And you know the speed differential is going to be huge. 350, he's got a 3 second gap. 300 meters, he's still got a nice 100 meter gap. And then 225, 200 meters to go. We see Merlier dropping off Philipsen, not the other way around. Cavendish gets blocked a bit by Brent van Moor, who gets caught coming back to the group. Case Bol, one of the quickest men on his day, is coming out of Cavendish's wheel with a clean line to the run to the line, slight right-hand bend. Philipsen's taking the shortest line through the bend, and Cavendish comes out of his wheel on this uphill drag with about 50 meters to go and passes Philipsen. Buani coming through for second, and Mark Cavendish, hashtag Cav to the Tour, started as a meme, mission complete, winning his first Tour de France stage since like 2016, or I don't know how long. He's had Epstein-Barr virus, changed teams, terrible crashes where he hurt his back. I remember one of them was really bad. He hit some road furniture. He's come to Quickstep. Apparently he had not ideal preparation. Didn't know if he was even going to the Tour. They don't even have the full lead out. And he didn't really have Mercu, to be honest, in the last 500. He was surfing wheels himself. And what a speechless honor, honestly, Benji, because he won easily.
Yeah, certainly. And I think it also was, we always say Mercu does a lot for the sprinter, but here he was staying in some other wheel. He was brought to that position perfectly, but the sprint he had to do himself, and he got over Philipsen quite easily in the last stretch. I do remember this final from somewhere. I think he won here before, but I'm not sure about it. I recall here, didn't he like beat Bosenhagen here a few years ago? I could be completely wrong, but the finish looked very similar. Nonetheless, Cavendish, wonderful, but is the story really done? Or is he going to get to that 34 of Eddie Merckx?
And he actually could.
He actually could. And he could take the green jersey.
Dude, he's in the green jersey right now. I'll do the results because we always forget because we're useless. Cavendish first, Buani second, Philipsen third. We'll talk about Alpecin in a second. Matthews fourth, Sagan fifth. Sagan sprints to the line. He never sits up because he wants to get as many points as possible. Bol sixth, Laporte seventh, Pedersen eighth. Van Poppel 9th, Greipel 10th. Van der Poel kept sprinting and finishing that group, finished 12th. Very, very odd. Good to see Greipel with the top 10, but notable absentees, I guess, Merlier, who did the lead out, and Demar 46th. I guess you got to give him a pass because of the crash yesterday, but FDJ were working. So a little bit odd for Demar, but I guess you can't form any definitive conclusions yet. And Wout van Aert didn't sprint, Benji. Did that surprise you?
Not really. I think that at the moment, Jumbo does not really have the ability to have Wout van Aert sprint because he's going to have to do a lot for the team in the coming weeks. I can assure you that because they lost Gesink. Everybody in their team basically fell except for him. So he's going to play a much more important role and this will influence his freedom. I don't believe they should have him sprint. He should be imprisoned, like not literally, but imprisoned for Roglic or potentially as co-leader right now. Due to the distance that Roglic is behind, just to put pressure, stage 7, the one you said at the preview back in the day, that's what's possible, and he can definitely potentially take yellow in the time trial.
I think that's why he didn't go for the sprint today, just because, you know, also Jumbo were licking their wounds after yesterday. Roglic did start. I mean, he put up that photo on Instagram. I mean, he's almost not a bit of dark humor in that. He's half naked. He looks terrible, the poor bloke. So respect to Roglic for continuing, but he looks so banged up that it makes sense for Jumbo-Visma to not put all their eggs in one basket. And
But. Let's talk about it. Absolute heartbreak, though, for Brent van Moor. Like, I remember some of these like historical moments where you've got Geise winning, joy for cycling fans globally. Was it in the Tour of Turkey back in the day?
Yeah.
And then we've got Tony Martin, I think, in a Vuelta stage at some point where he's caught in the final, like, 100 meters just before the line in a final sprint.
Might have been the tour.
This reminded me from that. And, oh, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. And, like, I'm so sad for Cavendish. I'm being attacked by a fly while saying this. That's why I'm, like, acting weird. But, hey, we've got such happiness for Cavendish, but I'm so traumatized by what happened before the catching of Benoit van Moor. It's I went from being extremely, extremely disappointed to super happy in a few seconds. Generally,
yeah, exactly. At least there was one rider, you know, who was then super excited afterwards. Cavendish, you know, he broke down into tears, super emotional, hugging everybody. Good job, Alaphilippe, leading him out. I guess he's in green right now. He's about 7 points ahead of Alaphilippe, his teammate. Sagan is on 48 points. Cavendish could honestly win green. And Merlier's not really been going for the intermediates. He's on 50 points. So, and then Merlier lost points today. Let's talk about Alps and Phoenix, Benji. Oh, sorry, GC, no changes. Vanderpoel still in yellow for the TT tomorrow. And Alpecin, going for Philipsen. I know it's a slightly uphill finish, like the one he won at the Vuelta.
It's a good idea.
Really?
You know why? Merlier should leave on the first rest day and try and obtain what Ewan was trying to get. Go to the Vuelta, win a stage. Win a stage in every Grand Tour in 2021. Perfect goal for the season.
True. And he's not doing Olympics. And he's, what's he going to do? He can go do Bing Bang Tour, I guess. And he, or was that overlaps with the Vuelta? Maybe he can leave the Vuelta early and go do
this
Bing
also,
Bang.
This also adds to Philipsen, you know, because he's got this opportunity now. We've been talking about his signing for Alpecin for the entire year. Why did he sign there? Does he get more opportunities? Not really. Right now, he got an opportunity. They actually gave him the opportunity of going for a Tour de France stage. That's great. I feel like if you take out Merlier and send him to the Vuelta for that one stage, despite the parkour of the Vuelta fitting Philipsen more, in my opinion, then I do have the feeling that you're giving Philipsen at least his Tour de France where you can gain more. But then again, so many flat sprint stages, though, for Merlier. So it's a combination of not being sure, really. And then I'm also asking, Tim Merlier, he's likely going to be selected for the Belgian team for the World Championships. Parkour fits him perfectly. Van Aert in the team, though. But if Van Aert was not in that team, I would put him as a heavy outsider for that race.
See, I disagree. I think it's the Tour de France. This is not a participation swimming carnival. You go with the best
Eddie
guy.
Eddie Merckx on the podcast.
No, like Merlier's, I don't care that he won yesterday. He won yesterday because he's fucking fast. And he's faster than Philipsen. He's bigger. I think when he actually accelerates, he can get guys out of his wheel, the likes of Cavendish who are here, whereas Philipsen couldn't. And he provided that draft the whole way to Cavendish. We saw it at Tour of Turkey. Cav slapped Philipsen around. He won four stages and Philipsen was there. I think if you want to win as many stages as possible, I think Alpecin would be like, we won a stage with Vanderpoel, got him in yellow. Merlier won yesterday. It's all gravy. Give Philipsen a chance. And listen, they can do what they want to do. They're killing it right now, Alps and Phoenix. But I just think Merlier was actually, performance-wise, the better option for today. Tomorrow's stage, I know. I get what you're saying, though, Benji. You know, they've made some promises, I'm sure, to him during when they signed him to actually give him opportunities. So good that they're not breaking their word. Tomorrow's stage, we already shattered it a little bit. 27Ks from Changer to Laval, the first ITT. Some of the contenders for it are banged up. Roglic and Thomas, who we thought would do well. It's not flat. I know you might think it looks flat. It's not. It's got like 300 meters elevation. That is not a flat TT. There's 1K, 5% climb, sort of punchy sections as well. It's why I think Van Aert took today off. I think if there wasn't a TT tomorrow, he might have been up there. But I think I said Kung for the TT. I still feel good about Kung top three for sure. But yeah, between Kung and Van Aert tomorrow.
I had Bissiker written down for this because I haven't seen a long time trial from him yet. And I was curious how he's going to do it. On paper, he's good at prologues. And his average length ones are really good as well. But we haven't seen in long ones. So it's a bit of a difficult bet, this one. In the Tour de Suisse, he was looking good as well. But I think that I also want to look at like outsiders because like we're talking about Van Aert. Obviously, for me, Van Aert is a favorite for this time trial. I got to be honest with that. And I think that when it comes to the yellow jersey, he's likely taking it. But I do want to think about the fact that Alaphilippe is now significantly in front of Fanart in that time trial, in the GC right now? You think what,
what's the gap? Is it so Alaphilippe's on 8 seconds? So it's it's 23 more. Seconds between Alaphilippe and Van Aert. That's close, isn't it?
I think it's just too close to keep yellow with Alaphilippe. But he's definitely setting himself up there. And Alaphilippe's time trials have not been bad at all this season. So I think that Alaphilippe could make a move here to take distance on riders that could potentially enter the top five to make sure he can survive for that potential top five in the mountains itself in this Tour de France. So this could be a very important stage for him. When it comes to Roglic and Thomas, we've got two riders that are semi-injured, as in they were hurt yesterday, and we don't have a clue if that's going to have a severe influence on the time trial. Likely a decent one is my guess. I think that Roglic, that's going to hurt on the bike, and Thomas the shoulder, I don't have a clue. And I think that Pogacar is likely the one that's looking better for the time trial to take time here on his closest competitors for GC. Carapaz, though, I think that he's going to do a decent time trial. And as a follow-up of the ones he's done in the last half a year, where he's done decent time trials, not at top level, but not at a bad level. So he will be able to relatively sustain a decent GC, I think, in his time trial. But he's likely going to lose time to a Pogacar. I don't know about Roglic and Thomas, thanks to yesterday. Well, despite yesterday. Unfortunately, true yesterday. That's what makes more sense.
Søren Kragh Andersen. So outsiders for top five or podium. Søren Kragh Andersen. Alexei Lutsenko.
Asgreen.
Yeah, sorry. Asgreen for sure. Lutsenko after the Dauphiné TT as well.
Bjerg? McNulty? Meh.
McNulty, yes. McNulty's good. Bjerg is very inconsistent and he's working a lot today. McNulty should be up there too. Quintana's going to lose time. Mas will lose time. I'll be incredibly surprised if Roglic beats Pogacar in this TT. I think it's got to be almost impossible. Like his half of his skin seemed to come off yesterday. But
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see. You know, Thomas is now on 1:07. He can pretty much leap back up to level ahead of Quintana, ahead of Mas, Guru, and maybe close to Pogacar. What about Uran, Benji? You think he's going to be well above average? Will he beat someone like Kelderman?
I think that beating Kelderman will be difficult. I think that Kelderman will be making a big step in these time trials. Not this is where he's good at. And if Kelderman has really good time trials, he can set a basis and a foundation for a potential top five, if not more, if Roglic and Thomas really disappoints in the time trials. So I think that Kelderman's looking really good. I think that we indeed need to worry about certain people. Like we mentioned it, I think Godu, Chavez, Mas, Lopez. Lopez has very inconsistent time trials, so that's what I'm worried about. Higuita will likely lose some time, I'm guessing. I don't know how good he is in time trials, but I don't think he's super excellent, but I also don't think he's super terrible at it. But I think we named the biggest favorites. We already made a mistake, I think, in the Giro somewhere where we forgot to mention Cavagna for a time trial. So let's hope we don't do it here. Yeah, that's true.
Because he crashed. He was going to win. But kind of had that mechanical. Alaphilippe, I think he's going to come top seven for sure. Mm-hmm. I think he's got good legs. Van der Poel, Benji, no chance. Is he going? He'll try. Surely he'll try.
He'll try to hang on, and I think he's going to be surprisingly high. But I don't think it's going to be close enough to keep the jersey. But it might keep him in the top five, and then we're looking at the stages that come after this, and then it becomes really interesting. Is he going to try again on stage seven to take it back on Le Creusot? Because it's very much possible. And then we have Le Grand Bornand, who probably is going to be the more difficult one, even though that, probably going to be the more difficult one to keep the jersey there. But on stage seven, he could just as well take it back if he loses here. But it all depends on what happens in those stages. If Roglic is in trouble in that stage, what will Van Aert do? Will he wait in the yellow jersey on Roglic, or will he keep himself up there? So many difficult decisions are going to have to be made at Jumbo that I wouldn't want to be in their position right now.
I promised that we'd come back to it, the protest at the start of the stage. Some more information came out. Philippe Gilbert made quite a nice video on YouTube actually discussing the whole situation. Very balanced and reasonable take. There are some English captions to it. It's in French. But he was basically saying every party is partly to blame. He said the riders also are madmen and go quick and take risks. And that was the cause of some of the crashes. He said ASO, the design of this stage ultimately wasn't particularly safe either. The corner, I think he was referring to in the descent where Hay crashed. The teams were to blame because certain teams, quite a few, recon the stage early and didn't mention anything with respect to safety, which they can do to their CPA representatives or whoever. The UCI were to blame because they didn't accept the riders' proposal to extend the 3 kilometre rule out to 5 or 8 kilometres. So everyone was partly to blame. ASO, I'm glad we didn't go too hard on them yesterday, Benji, because it turns out they were amenable and accepted the riders' proposal regarding the...
Nonetheless, I still think that their social media activity was stupid.
ASO?
No, CPA.
I was saying ASO.
Sorry. Okay.
Because they said, listen, extend the 3 kilometre rule. We don't care. Like, whatever. It was the UCI commissaires that nixed it and said, no, you can't do that. And I get that too, because it's hard to change things like that are complicated the night before a stage.
They do it at the Tour de France, at the Champs-Élysées stage, every year almost, if it rains.
Well, they can change the rule the night before.
Yeah, they did it. Like, that. The time is going to be done at the start of the Champs-Élysées section, I think, 2 years already.
But I think they can do... Like, they can say, they've got to set up the barriers or set up the timing, yeah, et cetera. So there are logistical things to take into account. Maybe it is, UCI being that. The thing is, there's not a provision in the rules to allow them to do that. But
yeah, but I would like to, talk about Laparcian's reaction, though. Like, he came out and he said, it's all the riders' fault. It's all the riders' fault. Like, accidentally, it also ends in his home village, this stage. So it's probably leaning into his subjective opinion on that. And I think that his reaction is arguably rubbish. And I think that Ryan Smith named it very well on GCN today, where he was like, this is a rubbish argument, and it's disrespectful for the riders, of which I was a part in the past. And I get that reaction because I feel like Laparcian is basically, he's the kind of guy right now that whenever they get criticism, he doesn't look into the criticism. He's like, No, it's the other person that did it. No, we didn't do it. It's not our fault. It's the other person. And the fact that they're arguably blaming the most important stakeholder in the sport, the cyclists, that easily without even considering a potential blame on themselves a tiny bit, is what is sad for the sport.
It's pretty simple, his response. It's, we're constantly trying to improve the safety for the riders. We've introduced they introduced the rule where the person checks the course, Benji. They've done that. It was introduced earlier. We are open to, adjusting flexibility for the 3 kilometer rule, et cetera. We're happy to look into that. And, condolences to all the riders injured in yesterday's crash. You can say that. That's completely non-committal as well. That's also not saying, we did anything wrong either, but it's less abrasive than just like pushing back on the riders, as you said, Benji, saying no, it's your fault. I think that's somewhat counterproductive, and if I was a rider reading that, it would jar me. Some of the communications could be finessed a little bit, even if you don't want to really offer up too much. But that's all from us today. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. The TT tomorrow, we'll be really looking forward to seeing the results. I hope both Thomas and Roglic are in good enough condition to not lose too much time. And we'll see you with the recap tomorrow. We've got Benji's PCM playthrough. Do they have TTs on PCM?
Yes, they do.
All right. So you'll have a TT tomorrow. That'll tell you the results in advance. I'll have my YouTube highlight video.
Not sure about that.
In a second on my YouTube channel. But we'll see you then. Ciao.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.